Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, 22 days until Election Day, and Donald Trump is saying the campaign is already rigged. Hillary Clinton doing damage control when it comes to WikiLeaks scandal. Also, new polling out shows how this race has changed. We'll also deal with the NAACP voting, the board voting this weekend to call for a national moratorium on the expansion of charter schools. That has angered black parents who were there in Cincinnati for the board meeting. We'll also talk about an African-American doctor who takes on Delta Airlines after a flight attendant wrongfully assumed she was not a doctor and refused her offer to help a sick passenger. Was this racial bias? Don't miss this conversation. Plus, Fit Live Win Monday, physical therapist and fitness enthusiast Dr. Ivan will share his secrets to a six-pack. Folks, News One Now starts right now.
It looks to me like a rigged election.
It's a rigged system, folks. It's a rigged system.
The election is rigged. The rigged system.
Well, I guess Donald Trump believes this election is rigged as more sexual assault accusers come forward. Also, his poll numbers are collapsing. Again, he is attacking the election system, even leading Republicans to say he is doing damage to democracy. Trump says the system is rigged in favor of his opponent, Hillary Clinton. Of course, that claim is getting strong pushback from House Speaker Paul Ryan, who says the states will carry out the election with integrity. And even Trump's own running mate, Governor Mike Pence of Indiana, says they will live with the outcome of the election.
We will absolutely accept the results of the election. Look, the American people will speak in an election that will culminate on November the 8th.
Cries of a rigged election are not overshadowing his alleged treatment of women that's being called into question since audio tapes surfaced from an Access Hollywood bus in 2005. Actually, that was a videotape. As many as 9 women are now accusing Trump of sexual misconduct, among them Summer Zervos, a woman who appeared on Trump's reality show, The Apprentice.
I pushed his chest to put space between us, and I said, come on, man, get real. He repeated my words back to me. Get real, as he began thrusting his genitals. He tried to kiss me again, with my hand still on his chest, and I said, dude, you're tripping right now. Attempting to make it clear, I was not interested. After hearing the released audio tapes and your denials during the debate, I felt I had to speak out about your behavior. You do not have the right to treat women as such. You do not have the right to treat women as sexual objects just because you are a star.
Since that news conference, Trump has denied the accusations, saying he respects women. His campaign has responded to the latest claims by pointing out Zervos sent an email this year praising Trump. A portion says, quote, embrace anyone who is honest. Mr. Trump is cut from the same cloth. Trump is now turning his attention to Hillary Clinton. It says the media is not digging hard enough into Clinton's email controversy or the Clinton Foundation's alleged ties to Russia. He is now insinuating Clinton is even taking drugs and was doped up during last Sunday's debate.
I think she's actually getting pumped up. I think we should take a drug test prior to the debate. I do. I think we should. Why don't we do that? We should take a drug test prior, because I don't know what's going on with her.
Now you also have Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark Jr., one of Trump's most vocal supporters, even stirring the rigged conspiracy pot. Sheriff Clark is drawing controversy for a tweet in response to people complaining about corruption in the White House in the election. This is what he sent out, a stock photo of what appears to be a mob of angry men and women carrying pitchforks, torches, and clubs. He wrote, quote, it's incredible that our institutions of government, White House, Congress, and Department of Justice, and big media are corrupt, and all we do is bleep, pitchforks, and torches time. He also called on the media, called the media, tweeted, all Trump supporters, let's not your hearts be troubled. Big media knows that our day is coming. Stay strong. All right, then. Tim Kaine, Clinton's running mate, says Trump is blaming Clinton, the media, and an unsupportive GOP leadership because he's desperate.
He's saying that America can't run a fair election. He is swinging at every phantom of his own imagination because he knows he's losing.
All right, folks, the Clinton campaign dealing with another release of WikiLeaks of stolen documents, including transcripts of some of her speeches to Goldman Sachs. WikiLeaks says the documents are from John Podesta's email account. The Clinton campaign, they have not confirmed any of the emails, saying that Russia's behind the hack. They also say Clinton was having a good time with various Wall Street executives, and also allegations the Clinton Foundation was receiving a pay-to-play when it comes to other countries as well. Folks, all right, let's get right to it with our panel right here. Folks, joining us right now in studio, we have Spencer Overton, who is the president and CEO of the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies. Dolores Ray is African-American Outreach Coordinator for Fairfax for Trump. Dr. Jason Johnson, a columnist, analyst, and political editor for The Root. All right, folks, look at the new polling data. Bottom line is it's showing ABC Wall Street Journal poll says it's 4 points, 4 points in terms of Hillary Clinton lead. ABC Washington Post, NBC Wall Street Journal shows a much larger lead. Bottom line is here. Jason, I'll start with you. When you see Trump saying rigged, 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 this is the same guy, though, who was touting every single poll when he was leading. This sounds like somebody who's preparing for a loss in three weeks.
Yeah. The refs took the game from me. My headphones weren't working. He's setting up all these excuses, and he's promoting violence. And there's some even deeper to this, Roland. It's also demonstrating his break with the Republican Party. How about all these Republican governors of blue states who are the ones who are administering the polls? So he's saying that John Kasich and Scott Walker and all these Republican governors are somehow working with Hillary Clinton to conspire against him. This is dangerous speech, but it's par for the course for Donald Trump. And I think we should really, really focus on the fact that this guy is basically saying, no matter what happens, I'm going to keep fighting on.
I mean, really, this legitimacy claim we saw with the president in terms of this birther issue, right? We see it in terms of barriers to voting. Let's erect barriers to voting because we question this legitimacy piece. It's, I think, a standard claim that is made that's, you know, just a political claim.
Dolores, to watch this, and you have Republicans who are already condemning Trump, mm-hmm. saying, how dare you cast doubt on an election process? How does this somehow help him help democracy?
Well, let's start off with a bit of truth. Being part Latino, I know for a fact that you can go and get absentee ballots right now and get people who are not Americans to fill out the forms, or you can fill it out for them and send the absentee ballots in. So even though we have governors from various unsundry states, from blue states and red states who are looking at the election, there's still a problem here. Yes, there can be a rigged system. In fact, we know that dead people have been voting and on the rolls.
So now, folks in Georgia pushed photo ID at the polls, but not with absentee. So you talk about fraud in terms of absentee,
yes.
But you know these ID laws are going up at the polls where there's no evidence of fraud.
Well, absolutely, there's fraud going on and all over the country.
Where?
No, Dolores.
Where?
From my understanding, it is just about everywhere.
No. Dolores. Hold up. On this show, you cannot do, whether you're Republican or Democrat, is come on here, throw something out, and don't have the facts.
Well,
I'm going to ask you again.
Okay.
Where?
In Chicago, we already know that there have been dead people who have voted.
In Chicago?
Yes, in Chicago. Yes, we already know that there has in the past been dead people
Dolores,
who have voted.
Dolores, you just said in the past. When?
The last election in 2012.
The last election.
And Chicago has
We're talking about the 2016 in Pennsylvania. You mean the exact same state? Where they passed a voter ID law, where the head Republican said.
Are you trying to say there are no dead people on the rolls who have voted?
What I'm trying to say, Dolores, mm-hmm. is what you're doing mm-hmm. is nonsensical and it is ridiculous. And the fact of the matter is,
to say that the elections in this country that there has never
what I'm
been
trying to say,
any
what I'm
dead
trying to say is this here.
Have ever
you have a process,
you
Dolores.
Cannot be serious.
Dolores, you have a process
you
right now.
Be
Dolores.
Serious.
You have a process right now where you have folks who actually verify the State Board of Elections. You have Republicans right now. You have people like Jeff Flake in Arizona who are saying what Donald Trump is doing is wrong. You have Republicans who are election law experts who are saying the allegations that he is throwing out is shameful and despicable in this country. Now, again, Dolores,
are you trying to say that there is absolutely no corruption, there is no problems in our voting system?
What I'm saying is here, Jason, is that we have a system where people have been caught, folks have actually been arrested, folks have actually been charged and convicted who have engaged in voter fraud. Right. And what I'm saying is in Indiana, where they raided an office, largely African Americans registered people to vote, because they said there were 10 supposed ballots that were faulty, so they grabbed all 45,000.
Or the 52 out of 36,000 that they did in Georgia, or all the other places this has happened. Dolores, see, here's the point, and this is the political science hat, right? I am a political science professor. I study these kinds of things. There is a difference between discrepancies in a voting system and a rigged system. That's the same thing as saying, because occasionally people shoplift at the grocery store, that everybody has this massive raid and we're doing a smash and grab at every Giant Eagle, okay? What Donald Trump is saying is that the entire election system, Republicans, Democrats, independents, and entire state governments are conspiring to prevent him from winning. That is fundamentally different than to say that there have been occasional absentee ballot problems, or let's go further back in the 2004 presidential election, where you had all these black ballot voting issues, where you had literally voting machines that were created and bought by companies that were giving money to George Bush that were making voting machines. We've had problems, but to say it's a rigged system is completely different.
There are parts of our election system that does have problem.
Dolores, the man is saying the whole country. Dolores, he is saying the whole country.
You're trying to say that there's you're using it as a discrepancy, and we see it as a problem.
Oh my God. A conspiracy and a discrepancy. There is a difference between a conspiracy and a discrepancy. I can be speeding, but it doesn't necessarily mean I'm drag racing. I can have shoplifting, and it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm a burglar. I can have several different circumstances where you have mistakes here and there, and it doesn't mean our entire system is rigged. And what that actually as a whole is fundamentally dangerous when you have a candidate who refuses to acknowledge the system that he has sworn to protect if he actually becomes elected president of the United States of America. And 9 times out of 10, that's happened because of voter ID.
Okay, hold on. So I'm sorry. So
there has been a rigged system in this country in terms of voting for many, many years. We've actually had to have black people stand there as recite the Constitution in the South before they could actually vote.
I'm glad you brought that up, Dolores. Dolores, when have you condemned the voter suppression in North Carolina?
All the time. I don't think we should be suppressing the vote.
Dolores, one second.
Okay, no, let me finish.
Dolores, I'm asking a question.
Let me finish.
After I ask a question.
You answer the
question. Has your candidate, Donald Trump, condemned the voter suppression of Republicans in North Carolina? Yes or no?
I can't answer that.
Okay.
So I'm not sure
okay.
of Donald Trump. I can't speak for Mr. Trump.
Okay.
I can speak for me.
Dolores,
mm-hmm.
have you sent word to Donald Trump campaign that they should condemn the massive voter suppression in North Carolina?
What do you mean by voter suppression? Define it for me.
Dolores, a three-judge federal panel said Republicans in North Carolina had a laser-like focus on targeting black voters. They said they specifically asked for how many black people voted in the first week, how many black people who voted on Sundays. They said it was a laser-like targeting. They got rid of Sunday voting. They cut early voting. They cut the hours. Three federal judges said laser-like focus targeting black voters in North Carolina by the Republican House, by the Republican Senate, by the Republican governor. There is your evidence.
Evidence in terms of, okay, in my view, you're saying that black people don't, or people in general, don't need to have a license.
No, I didn't mention voter ID. Excuse me, Dolores.
I
did not. I did not mention voter ID.
Dolores,
it was considered the federal. Dolores, hold up. You brought up Jim Crow.
What you're saying.
Dolores, one second.
People, in order to get a welfare check, have to have voter ID.
Did you bring up Jim Crow?
I'm not bringing up Jim Crow.
No, no, no.
Right
you
now.
Said that you said black people had to recite the Constitution, right?
They
that
did.
That was during Jim
they
Crow.
Did.
The same,
in
the same.
South,
Dolores.
That was a rigged
Dolores,
that is
the
example
same.
Of
you're
a
right.
Rigged
guess
system.
What? North Carolina is still in the South. The same three federal judges, Dolores, said this. We have not seen this level of voter suppression since the Jim Crow days. That was in North Carolina by your party of people who are backing Donald Trump. Why won't you own up to what the federal judges said?
Why won't you own up to the fact that they have to did the to
okay.
have a
all right.
a to have
okay.
a
all right.
hold on, let me finish my
Dolores,
sentence.
Go ahead.
Let me finish my sentence. To have voter ID, no matter where you are in this country, and to do anything, you have to have it. So why can't you have voter ID?
Here's what you don't understand, because we saw in Wisconsin, same Republican Governor Scott Walker, where they were dragging their feet on actually processing even the applications for voter ID when people even applied for it.
Listen,
Dolores,
to get a welfare check, you have
Dolores,
to have a voter ID.
You just
ID.
Missed what I
to
said.
Get food stamps,
Dolores,
you have to have an ID.
You just missed what
in
I said.
To get a
in
library
Wisconsin,
card, you have to have an ID.
In Wisconsin, where they have voter ID, they were not even processing the applications. Gloria, stop
Let
defending voter
something.
Suppression.
You can't do
when we come back,
we
got our headlines.
In
Later in the show, we'll also talk about the issue. Speaking of North Carolina, GOP office is vandalized. Plus, we'll talk about NAACP and charter schools. And what's up with a black woman who's a doctor can't help a patient on a Delta flight? All of that, News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Police have arrested one man, the shooting death of U.S. Olympic sprinter Tyson Gay's 15-year-old daughter. Police in Lexington, Kentucky say 15-year-old Tiffany Gray was shot in the neck during an exchange of gunfire between two vehicles in a restaurant parking lot early Sunday morning. She was taken to the University of Kentucky Medical Center where she was pronounced dead. Authorities say Trinity Gay was not in either of the two vehicles involved in the shooting. Police have charged a 21-year-old man with wanton endangerment and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. Trinity Gay was a sprinter at her high school in Kentucky. Her father, Tyson, holds a U.S. 100-meter record and has competed in the last three Summer Olympics. A GOP field office in North Carolina was firebombed over the weekend. It's happened at the Orange County Republican Party headquarters in Hillsboro near Durham. Authorities say a bottle containing a flammable substance was thrown through a front window. The substance ignited and damaged furniture inside the office. A North Carolina Republican Party spokeswoman says that the office is now completely unusable and that absentee ballots may have been destroyed. Authorities also discovered graffiti on a nearby building that read "Nazi Republicans leave town or else" with a swastika drawn next to the message. Hillary Clinton's campaign condemned the incident. She tweeted, "The attack on the Orange County HQ at NC GOP office is horrific and unacceptable. Very grateful that everyone is safe." A North Carolina GOP office tweeted their thanks in response to Hillary's tweet. Donald Trump weighed in a little differently. Animals representing Hillary Clinton and Dems in North Carolina just firebombed our office in Orange County because we are winning. No one was hurt during the incident, which is now under investigation. According to reports, the office did not receive any threats prior to the incident. An African-American college student is suing the Metropolitan Washington Police Department for $11 million. 19-year-old Jason Goolsbee, seen here on the far left, was arrested last year when a woman told police that she felt uneasy at a bank ATM machine because she thought she was going to be robbed by Goolsbee and a friend who was with him. Goolsbee says all he did was to stop and to open the bank's door for a couple with a baby stroller. When police spotted Goolsbee and his friend walking down the street, they apprehended him and pinned him down to the ground. This video was taken by his friend. It went viral and sparked protests in D.C. A D.C. Police Department investigation concluded that the officers used force that was, quote, reasonably necessary to bring the situation under control to overcome the level of resistance. Goolsbee's lawsuit accuses the police officer of assault, battery, and failing to prevent false imprisonment. He's seeking $1 million in compensatory damages and $10 million in punitive damages. Folks, the 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick played in his first game in nearly a year yesterday in Buffalo. Kaepernick, who has been refusing to stand for the national anthem to protest racism and police brutality in America, received a show of support for pro-Kaepernick demonstrators outside of Ralph Wilson Stadium. Inside, the crowd chanted USA, USA when Kaepernick and two of his teammates took a knee during the anthem. But Kaepernick's fellow demonstrators say their protests carry an important message.
Well, I think to the people who may be upset about it, I think that they maybe don't understand the point of this, right? It's not being able to protest is patriotic, right? We're not necessarily anti-American. We're not anti-Buffalo Bills, but we are anti-racism and white supremacy.
Despite his support outside the stadium, didn't go so well inside. The Bills crushed the 49ers 45-16. Folks, 22 days away from Election Day, and there are some voting registration deadlines you need to know about. In Virginia, today's the deadline to register either online or by mail or in person. Also tomorrow, October 18th, the deadline to register either online, by mail, or in person. In Florida, Kansas, Maine, Maryland, Minnesota, Nevada, New Jersey, Oregon, and West Virginia. If you live in Maine or Minnesota, the deadline to register is in person is November 8th on Election Day. In Maryland, you have until November 3rd to register in person. All right, folks, coming up next on News One Now, we'll break more down when it comes to this election. Also, deal with the issue of an African-American doctor on a Delta flight who says a flight attendant didn't believe her when she said she was a doctor offering to help. Next on News One Now, TV One.
Seven.
Hello, I'm Brenda Lawrence, Congresswoman from the Michigan 14th District. You've got one vote. Use it.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
A black doctor says Delta Airlines flight attendant rejected her offer to help an ailing passenger because she didn't believe she was a doctor. The incident took place October 9th on a flight from Detroit to Minneapolis. It has outraged tens of thousands of professional black women across America. Houston OBGYN Tamika Cross reached out to a passing flight attendant after she heard the page for medical assistance. The flight attendant dismissed her offer of help. A moment later, accepted the help of a white male doctor who showed up.
As she's like going past my seat, I raise my hand trying to grab her attention and explain to her that I was a physician. And she immediately replied, you know, saying, "Oh, no, sweetie, put your hand down. You know, we're looking for physicians or nurses. We need some type of medical personnel. We have an emergency right now. We don't have time to talk to you." I see there is another gentleman that's coming from the front of the plane. And this is a middle-aged Caucasian male walking towards the back of the plane where we were and where the incident had occurred. And so she said, you know, "Thank you for your help." She's very polite. She said, "Thank you for your help, but he's a physician and he has his credentials, you know." And so at that point, you know, of course, there's a lot of thoughts going through my mind. I'm sitting here in disbelief like, wow, okay. And my blood is boiling.
Cross, a fourth-year resident at the University of Texas Health Science Center in Houston, she posted her experience on Facebook saying she was sick of being disrespected and called the flight attendant's actions blatant discrimination. The response was swift and overwhelming. Thousands of black female doctors, some wearing lab coats, posted pictures of themselves on Twitter with hashtags Tamika Cross, We Do Exist, and What a Doctor Looks Like. Delta Airlines says it was troubled by the discrimination accusation and is investigating the incident. Dr. Cross says she doesn't want to get the flight attendant fired. She just wants to shed light on what she calls innate biases in the hopes the flight attendant will get some sensitivity training. Joining us right now is Vakisha Fripp, a founding board member of Artemis Medical Society, also a doctor as well, plus our panel, Spencer Overton, Dolores Reyes, and Dr. Jason Johnson. So this, I mean, clearly this is, I mean, for a flight attendant to even go, "I'm sorry, you're not real."
Right.
It's crazy.
That's the basis of this discussion. So when have we ever had to give credentials for being a physician in an emergency? Typically, you give care. Afterwards, if you need some validation, if you think something is required, then fine. But in that instance, they called for a doctor. She identified herself as being a doctor. She should have been allowed to do what she does.
Now, she says she doesn't want the flight attendant fired.
Right.
What should Delta do?
So we're looking to Delta to be transparent in their interview, to represent, to do the interview with a diverse team, and then to take the lead. They propose to be global leaders, right? So take the lead in this and educate not only Americans, but global citizens that this is what a doctor looks like, and that we look like many things, and that when we are called, we always show up, but we're never given the respect we deserve.
Well, what's also interesting is that she didn't question the credentials of the white male who stood up.
But his credentials were shown, right? He was a white male, and so that's the issue.
Go ahead, Spencer.
This implicit bias is a real issue. It's not just in terms of Delta. It's not just in terms of black women. If you look at the studies, they show You get resumes, identical resumes. You have a stereotypically black name, stereotypically white name. Whites are 50% more likely to get the job. White state legislators, much more likely to respond to someone with a stereotypically white name than black name. Studies across the board have shown that this exists. Black folks, there are these thousands of microaggressions, right, that really add up here. And this shows that, you know, it doesn't just hurt African Americans. It can hurt, you know, whites or others who are in need of medical care or something else.
And of course, we also we saw Senator Tim Scott talk about that, how he's been checked for his credentials going into the United States Senate, even though his pen, you only get that if a U.S. senator.
Right.
Dolores, but asking you though, is Governor Mike Pence though recently, where even the last debate where he said, "Look, there's too much discussion about these implicit biases when it comes to police departments." The reality is, it exists on Delta Airline when it comes to doctor, in police departments, in corporate America. So to act as if it doesn't exist, that's crazy.
I think there's some level of bias that does exist. Absolutely.
But Pence said it's just too much talk about that.
Well, I think that our country is totally divided. I think that at some point we're going to have to come together at some point. But it doesn't negate the fact that that it does exist. I do think that our conversation or our narrative of the day needs to be tempered in such a way that it forges a way for us to move forward as a country.
Jason.
I'm going to be more candid. They should be fired, right? Because if that was my loved one on a plane who was in an emergency situation and needed a doctor and they denied a person, I don't care if it's a man, woman, straight, right, gay, trans, Muslim, Hindu, Sikh, you get the first doctor you can and save the person who matters to me on the plane. And this is dangerous. And, you know, and this isn't the only instance. You had the instance last week where you had the black trans woman who was kicked off an United flight for wearing a Black Panther hat and an ASAP Rocky shirt. This is another example of not just implicit bias, but how it affects commerce, how it affects health, how it affects life, and it's absolutely unacceptable. And I'm somebody who flies Delta all the time.
Right, I'm from Atlanta, so Delta, I'm familiar with Delta. But I think these are unique opportunities, right? So if we don't talk about it, it never gets discussed, right? So these things unfortunately have to happen. Not to take any light away from Dr. Cross, but as an African-American physician, a female, how many times has this happened? We're used to this, and we should not be. Right. But since this has happened, now use this platform to educate people, right? That's what sparks conversations. You have to have something that occurs.
Gotcha.
God bless her. She's a little resident. She didn't have a mouthpiece. Right. But we have a mouthpiece, and we stand with her to say, this is not right. We will not go along with this. We will not accept your urinal. We don't know where the cafeteria is. I can't tell you what time it closes. I don't know any of that information. What I can tell you, though, if you need a plastic surgeon, I'm your girl. I can tell you if you're going to die, I can do CPR, I can save you. I can tell you a million things I can do to help you, but what I can't do is be less than who I am.
Mm-hmm. All right, Dr. Vakesha Fritt, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Speaking of issues being raised, NAACP Board of Directors voted this weekend to ratify a resolution calling for a freeze on the expansion of charter schools. The board cited the school's lack of transparency and accountability and harsh disciplinary practices as some of the reasons for the decision. Charter school supporters in Cincinnati, Ohio, came from all over the country. Memphis protested outside the hotel where the NAACP was meeting because also the NAACP refused to meet with many of those parents. They say the public school system is failing students and charter schools are the only viable alternative. NAACP believes federal dollars used to fund charter schools could be better spent on making traditional public schools better. In a statement, the NAACP said this: while we have reservations about charter schools, we recognize that many children attend traditional public schools that are inadequately and inequitably equipped to prepare them for the innovative and competitive environment they will face as adults. Underfunded and undersupported, these traditional public schools have much work to do to transform curriculum, prepare teachers, and give students the resources they need. And now, of course, there are about 7,000 charter schools in the U.S., servicing about 6% of public schools, some 3 million students, a lot of them minorities. National Alliance for Public Schools called the NAACP move misguided. In fact, we did reach out to the NAACP to get President and CEO Cornell Brooks on the show to discuss this. He did not return our phone calls, text messages, or emails. We also tried to reach Hillary Shelton, of course, who is the VP as well, and then was unable to get him. Joining us via FaceTime from Harlem, New York, Dr. Steve Perry, of course, who runs a charter school there, as well as one in Connecticut. So, Steve, NAACP makes this decision. I was looking at a lot of the tweets over the weekend. Somebody who, of course, big-time school choice supporter like you, And parents were angered the NAACP wouldn't even meet with them.
I'm not surprised, unfortunately, that the NAACP would not even consider meeting with the parents, because they're stalwart in their position, regardless of the fact that it's based upon specious information and cherry-picked data. Sadly, the national chapter of the NAACP is so significantly detached from what's happening at the local level. Our school in Connecticut has been opened in large part because the president of the NAACP in Connecticut was a staunch supporter of school choice, understanding that it's not just about charters, but it's about school choice. When the overwhelming majority of black children are forced into failed schools, why on earth would you support a system that has never served black people? Established in 1635, a time in which African Americans were enslaved, why would you expect that that same system with this current DNA would produce anything other than that which it has produced, which is a undereducated African American population that's clawing its way up through the social and economic ranks? It's absurd. And let's be honest, we all know that the NAACP national headquarters has received a significant amount of money from the teachers union, the only other organization to call for a moratorium on charter schools in particular, because they are non-union, are the teachers unions. So this is a teachers union statement that they have implanted in the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People national headquarters.
Steve, the fact that, first of all, we had a conversation a couple of weeks ago that's going to air on TV One in this time slot on Friday. It's a two-part conversation. Discussion is school choice, the black choice. So that'll be on Friday. Plus, we'll air part two on next Friday, October 28th. I mean, this is a issue for a lot of black parents. We did a poll here last year. TV One, more than 70% of black parents said that they would put their kids in charters. More than 70% said they even support vouchers. It seems as if black parents are far ahead of where the NAACP is, and the NAACP seems to be opposing what black parents say they want.
Well, because they're supporting the suburban, largely white teachers union. I mean, it really is that simple. It's not about data. They talk about wanting more transparency. I ran a school in a traditional public school system for 10 years, and I now run two charter schools. And I can tell you that there's greater transparency as a charter operator because, one, we have a five-year contract. We have to go through an application process that has to be approved in Connecticut by both houses of state legislature. And then we could be closed at any time. That's not the case when I ran a traditional school. The traditional school received significantly more money. So when they have this conversation about resources, we received $15,000 per pupil in a $42.5 million building, as opposed to the $11,000 that we received and no building. And the list goes on. They talk about how they want to make sure that the discipline practices are equal. The fact is that the 90% of all African-American children do attend a traditional public school. So when you're talking about 40% of the expulsions being African-Americans, that's in the traditional schools. That's not among the just 700,000 that are going to charter schools. And finally, when we look at the fact that this is not about data, we have to ask the simple question, then why on earth would they make a decision that runs in the face of the very community that they're supposed to serve? It's because, unfortunately, the national headquarters of the NAACP has lost its rudder, and it is drifting in a direction that runs counter to the very reason why we even have magnet schools and charter schools. It's because in 1954, the NAACP understood that when you assign children to school by zip code, it is proxy to race, and as a result of which, you can keep black and poor kids in failing schools through perpetuity. So they're not even holding on to the very mission that they've become known for.
Steve Perry, we appreciate it. Thanks a bunch.
My pleasure.
I want to go to our panel here. What's interesting about this is that President Obama, huge supporter of charter schools. And again, I was following this. They wouldn't meet with a lot of those parents. They traveled from Memphis. They traveled from all over Ohio. Well, these black parents were saying, no, these traditional schools are failing our kids. If this is my best shot of my kid getting education, I'm down with it.
I think that in concept, charter schools are fine. I think the state-by-state differences in how they're administered has been my primary concern. That and the fact that I do think teachers' unions are important in general. I've taught at a charter school when I was in graduate school. It was in North Carolina. It was perfectly fine. It was run by some local academics. And then you have instances where charter schools are not run so well. So I think any local parent who's like, look, this is working for me, they have a right to make that argument. I think it'd probably be better for the NAACP to be a bit more nuanced about the argument and say, look, we may not dislike charter schools as a whole, but we got to look at state-by-state example.
Well, here's the deal, though. We say state-by-state, the reality is that's the exact same thing you can say about traditional schools. You can say, and this is the thing that I've said as somebody who supports school choice. Are there traditional schools that work? Yes. And I say, study them, replicate them.
Right.
And then the ones that don't, shut them down, change them.
Right.
There are charter schools that work. I say study them, replicate them. Those that don't, shut them down. I don't back failure. So the problem I have is if the NAACP is essentially saying, oh, moratorium on these charter schools, how about moratorium on these failing traditional schools?
Yeah,
I mean, that to me is a problem here.
Yeah, so there is a big distinction. There's a distinction between for-profit charter schools and non-profit charter schools. Like, let's just acknowledge
about
that they're
about 70% of all charter schools are nonprofit.
Right.
So about 70%.
Right. So we got to distinguish it. Another thing we just got to acknowledge, this is a fight in terms of progressive circles, right? And this is one of the big, you know, steps in that fight in terms of progressive circles with regard to charters.
But see, my issue, this is not about progressive circles, Dolores. Mm-hmm. This is about whether or not black kids are going to get a shot.
Right.
And what's interesting to me is that when I hear this argument, even from the NAACP, I go, we have magnet schools, which actually are selective. I went to one. You had to apply to get in. So when I hear people say, oh, no, that's bad, I'm going, but you support this. Go ahead.
The party line, the Republican party line, has always been for choice, school choice and vouchers. My thing is, why should our children have to stay in a failing school? And why should we have to be in a failing school just because of our zip codes? This isn't fair. And I think parents have the right to make a choice. The parents have the right to make the decision what school the children should go to, not the zip code and not the school system.
Well, let me say this here. First of all, yes, across the country, Republicans have been there. But I know for a fact that in Illinois, when they had a voucher program there, it was also Republicans. State Senator James Meeks, Republicans in the House, five of them who voted not for that to go into effect and didn't pass. And so there are places where Republicans have talked a good game, didn't back it up, same as Democrats. See, for me, this ain't a Republican-Democrat thing. This has to do with party. For me, this has to do with whether or not you have options. And the reality, and then when people say, well, look, me and the president went at it on Air Force One 2009. He said, Roland, I would support vouchers if all kids could get one. I said, well, you support charters, all kids can't go. The reality is, in an education system, there will be those who go to public school, traditional, charters, home, private, homeschool, online school, take your pick. It's all a part of the education pie. On this one, NAACP is dead wrong, and I don't think they're going to be able to win this argument because black parents are going to say, no, my kid deserves education, and I don't care what y'all got to say, I'm going to support somebody where they get a shot.
Well, I think if the NAACP was as equally passionate about accountability in existing public schools, it would be less of a problematic position. Because I agree with you. Look, if you are in a public school and it's doing lousy, you should be able to pull your kids out. You should be able to fire. The same government employee expectations that we have of local cops should be held of teachers as well. And it should be tested in some way other than just standardized testing. It's like, look, if you've got generation after generation of kids who aren't doing well, fire the principal, fire the teachers, and redo the school. That, to me, is a step one. I think charter schools come after that, but the NAACP's position, again, focus on fixing what exists before you start eliminating the solutions that people want to
and
bring.
And last point, Spencer, the other thing is this. I hear black people talk about having black history in our schools and controlling curriculum. When you run a charter school,
right.
You determine the curriculum.
Right.
You determine that. You determine who gets contracts. There are African Americans who are actually running schools. So this is a way for black folks to say we are in control of our kids' education versus hoping folks listen to us in traditional school.
Yeah, that's true, but we don't necessarily need to impugn the motives of the NAACP in terms of the leadership. They could come to this conclusion. They may be right, they may be wrong, but my point is we don't necessarily have to say they did it for money or impugn the motives.
Well, first of all, if that's your position, that's your position.
Right.
All I'm saying is this here. When it comes to our kids, bottom line is I want our kids to get educated, period. I don't care how. If it works, it works. And if it's a charter school, great. Traditional, great. As long as our kids get educated.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, folks, coming up next, a new book claims self-awareness is the key to success for women. I'll talk with the author, Michelle Thornton, plus Dr. Ivan returns to News One Now, sharing his secrets to getting a six-pack, not a six-pack of beer. We'll explain. Fit, Live, Win Monday, 16 before top of the hour, News One Now, TV One.
Michael Hancock, mayor of the city and county of Denver. You've got just one vote. Use it.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin. Every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
All right, folks. Michelle Thorne's career as a media executive, you never guess. She once struggled to find her purpose and success in career and life. Well, she says she's cracked the code. Wrote a book to ensure no other woman would have to struggle like she did. Her new book is called Strategic. That's right. Life and Career Winning Strategies for Women breaks down 10 top tips for women in life and career. She joins us right now. Strategic? Is that it? Okay.
Strategic.
Okay. All right then. What's the one thing? What's the one that really dominates, that keeps women from being their best self in their career?
Ooh, I think the biggest thing is self-awareness. And what I'm doing is I'm going around the country talking about it. And it's not knowing yourself, it's knowing how others perceive you. Roland, we've both been in the business a long time. And when you don't know how people view you, roadblocks pop up and you can't go over them. So I think that has been the biggest hurdle.
Now, when you talk about that, though, because some people say, well, look, I mean, bottom line is, how do I even know what somebody thinks about me?
Oh, you pay attention. And this is what I love about this story and Strategic is that God already gave us an awareness as mothers, as sisters, as business people, and we don't tap into it. And if we do, we tap into it for other people, for our kids, for our employers. So we know we get that thing and we can sense in the way people respond to us and view us, the questions they ask, and we just let it roll off. But if we start to really pay attention, then we can begin to win.
We discussed this many times on the show as well, and that is a lot of women are hesitant when it comes to negotiating. And you say, ask for what you've earned.
Ask for what you've earned. We put it in a category of ask for what you want. But if you really list down what you have accomplished for whomever, whatever relationship you're in, I'm not asking for what I want. I'm asking for what I've already earned, and I'm willing to negotiate on those facts. But we have to say that we've earned something in order to get what we should get.
Yeah, it's like when I've been negotiating, someone says, well, you know, you really aren't worth this. And I go,
yes, I am.
You mean tell me I do all of that? You go find somebody else who can do all of that. And then let's see how that conversation.
Maybe I should become your agent, Roland, because you know what?
Matter of fact, no, I tell people all the time, you might want to talk to my agent because he's going to be a lot nicer than I'm going to be. I'm going to negotiate harder.
You know what? You're right. I've seen it.
I'm going to go negotiate harder than he will.
Yeah.
You also say this is key now. Turn up your social game.
Let me tell you, and it's in many ways. So yes, you need to have a social game, but you have to have it in a way that is appropriate because the first thing
you mean
that
social media.
Absolutely. You have to have a social media game that's on point from a perspective. So all your friends on Facebook show up to your interview. These are the people that HR is pulling when they're looking at you. I've had a young lady who interviewed for me, and the legal department reached out and said, let me just share this with you before you make this decision, because she's not representing herself the way the brand should look. So yes, you have to have a lot of followers. Yes, it's imperative, but you really need to pay attention to who are your friends everywhere, because they represent your brand.
A lot of people are not fully aware of the folks that, photos they post, they go, well, that's just my personal deal. No, that's also you.
Absolutely.
So just last week, literally, and she's watching right now, I had this conversation with a friend of mine who was trying to negotiate a raise. And we were having this debate between, I was like, look, she's like, should I ask for what I can get? Or should I ask for what I'm owed? How do you negotiate that line? Because she was concerned that if she asked for a 20% raise, that would be offensive, that she would get in trouble one way or another. And I was like, hey, just put some data behind it. How do you negotiate that?
Well, there's two ways, right? So the marketplace dictates what you're worth. So I always say everyone should be resume ready. Mm-hmm. And you always have to be able to have conversations in the marketplace. And if you use your relationships to find out what someone's worth, that's the first tool. The second tool is I keep a list of every accomplishment I've made. And when I do that, so when I go in, it's like, I've done these five things, and in my competitive set internally, haven't done these things. So 20% is actually, I'm giving you a break. It's really just about being informed about your contribution to the marketplace, to your employer, being different. All tools.
Folks, the book is Strategic, Life and Career Winning Strategies for Women by Michelle Thornton. Michelle, good to see you.
Roland, thank you so much. Michelle Thornton G.
Michelle Thornton G.
That's my married name. Yes, I had to give my husband a shout out. Well, look how Roland's looking.
Where in the hell is a G on the book?
You know what?
See, right there. Don't be just throwing something out there.
Yeah,
is G on the book?
No,
it's not. Is G on the book?
It's not.
Well, let me try to throw out G. I'm like, who the hell are you talking about?
Yes.
Girl gone. Up next, Dr. Ivan talks about having a six-pack on Fit Live Win Monday. We'll be back in a moment.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin every weekday morning at 7 on
TV. All right, folks, got a technical issue. We'll actually have the Dr. Ivan six-pack package for next week. Let's go back and talk about this whole issue. Spencer, you had a question about Michelle's book.
I do. How do you balance this notion of not being kind of the aggressive, assertive, loud black person, right, versus being too passive, right, so that you're in that right balance?
I ain't had that passive problem. Right. Go ahead. I ain't.
Well, I'm going to elevate it, right? It's being a black and then being a woman.
Right.
So, you know, 90% of CEOs say that they make a hiring decision by how you shake their hand. So I'm 5'9". I'm an African-American woman. So we have to understand that the way we present ourselves in front of somebody is how we're going to be judged. Don't squeeze it too hard. Don't stare at them too long. But to have enough self-awareness to know that those are the metrics that you're being judged on allows you to win. Mm-hmm. And a lot, are you selling out? Are you playing a game? Look, we're just all here to win, to take care of our family. So you have to understand the rules of engagement, no matter where you sit and how you talk to somebody.
Question.
Yes, ma'am.
Give us some advice for women entrepreneurs like myself. How do we win, and how do we get people, how do we get to understand how people are perceiving us when we're doing business with them?
Great question. So let me give you an example. I was speaking someplace, and a young lady says, I want to start this foundation for women, and da-da-da-da-da, right? And I said, well, who's your competition? And she's like, nobody's done this before. And that is absolutely not true. And so when you understand your competition, your niche, and your story, you can win big. So I always tell women, when you're in an elevator with somebody, what's the one thing you want to leave with them? So I say the same thing with entrepreneurial women. What do you want to leave with someone that is your unique stamp on your business? Who's your competition? And that will give you a path to winning.
Here's one of the things that I spend a lot of time on, and whether it's young women or young men, and in getting them to understand there's a difference between thinking you can do anything and everything and actually having a skill set to actually do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot, I mean, and I'll get pushback and they're like, well, yeah, but you're telling me I can't do it. I'm going, no, I'm not telling you can't do it, but right now you don't know a damn thing.
Right.
And that's just being just straight up. I don't see him mince words with it because, and it's hard for some people to understand that you're trying to get them to get to that whole point of vision. And understand that you actually have to have a vision. It can't just sort of be, well, I can just do whatever. I'm going, no, whatever is not a game plan.
Correct. And so I'm glad you made it. The whole point of the book is I went to 100 women conferences across the country, and women continue to show up and show up and show up, and they get empowered and motivated and think you can do all these things, and social media is elevating these millennials, and then you have no plan. Mm. And without a plan, it doesn't become a goal and it can't become reality. The whole point of the book is please put a plan together. Please write it out. Don't type it in your phone. Don't just put it on a vision board. You have to write it out in front of you, and then you have to time stamp it so that you can execute it. Period. There is no other way to win. You got to go old school to actually win.
First of all, that's biblical. That's Habakkuk chapter 2. No, it is. That's biblical.
Right?
So some of y'all who don't have it, this ain't Donald Trump where, you know,
yes.
where was it 2 Corinthians?
Right.
It was. That's Habakkuk chapter 2.
Yeah, exactly. So yes, it is biblical. And, you know, if you read the book and if ladies get the book, and a lot of men have raised their hand and be like, you know, where is my verse in the book? I mean, and this is for women, but the whole point is that you have to build a plan for this.
Another point, love, before I go to break, you said invest in yourself. And that's the other thing as well, because a lot of, again, you know, I tell people all the time, when things are going well, that's when you make a financial commitment in yourself, because when it's time for you to become that entrepreneur and do your own thing, you've already put yourself in position, as opposed to lose a job or you want to step out there and then you go, oh, now I should work on my plan.
And invest in yourself doesn't mean go to the hair salon and buy some new shoes. It means get a voice and diction class. It means take a presentation class. It means do other things. Find out how your employer invests in your career. Find out what is available to you so you can walk in your best God-given self. It truly is.
Hold tight 1 second. I got to go to a break, 60 seconds. Be back, News One Now on TV.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Birthday shout-out time. Actress Sharon Leo turns 44 years old. Wood Harris turns 47. Rapper and producer Wyclef Jean turns 47. Ziggy Marley turns 48. Astronaut Mae Jemison turns 60 years old. Folks, tomorrow on TV One, tomorrow 10 p.m. Eastern, look for a News One Now primetime special featuring the founder of Radio One, Kathy Hughes, of course, doing our powerful one-on-one interview. We talk about her life and legacy as a media mogul and the upcoming Howard University dedication of the Kathy Hughes School of Communications building. Trust me, you don't want to miss that. We've got some quite interesting stories. Of course, we shot that last week on the campus of Howard University, so you do not want to miss it. As I said earlier, look for our special Is School Choice the Black Choice on Friday, airing right here at 7 a.m. on News One Now as well. Don't forget the election, 22 days away. Go vote and be sure to get Michelle Thornton's book, Strategic. I got to go. Holla!
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.